Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Do we have a special offer for our listeners?
Yes, we do. And I also want to disclose that I am not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice, but we do produce the VRTrader.com newsletters and have since the 1990s. In any event, the discount code, if you want to sign up, we're happy to offer you a 50% off, and the code is 2022 half off. So go to VRTrader.com, and when you sign into one of the newsletters, use the promo code 2022 half off.
As we speak, the Dow Jones, NASDAQ, and S&P 500 all up today. Some saying on the news from the U.S. government that the fourth quarter GDP went up 3.3% when they expected 2%. 3.3%, that sounds like a pretty good hike, Mark.
Well, you know, if you believe the numbers, then that's fine. I'm more skeptical about government numbers anyway. The street accepts them, reports them, and reacts on them. And, you know, we don't know if that's really true or not. Inflation, my understanding and some of the research I've done, is not doing as well as the official reports are, and a lot of this is politically motivated. And you've got, you know, an election this year, and you know, the street is behind it because they want stock prices up. And the story that the Fed's going to lower rates, you know, was tempered back a little bit from six cuts this year, maybe down to three. And but you know, there might be some surprises, and there have been some surprises already. You know, the PCE price index increased 2%, but it excluded food and energy when that came out. So, you know, that's sort of a false index. So, you know, there's nothing too surprising here. You know, we have, you know, the market doing what it wants to do. We have the Magnificent Seven stocks, you know, sort of running the market, though two of them, interestingly, Apple was down today, and big time Tesla dropped about 12% today because they came out with a story about production growth will be lower going forward. But for the most part, you know, this rally that pushed the S&P to new highs was, you know, motivated by the big seven stocks. So not, it's really been a continuation of the 2023 fourth quarter pattern.
Yes, and if you took those top seven stocks out of the stock market, what would the stock market look like?
Well, I mean, much less of a gain for the year. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but it's I think it's, you know, versus 23%, it'd be down to 6 or 8%, something like that, if you didn't have the big names in there. You know, so there've been, you know, a lot of stocks that haven't done well. But you know, if you're in the index, and many people are invested in the ETFs like the S&P and so forth, they're, you know, they're grinning like the Cheshire cat. They're happy. They could care less, you know, as long as their prices are up. How it got there, whether it was one stock or you know, seven, who cares, as long as they're making money. And you know, the big mover, of course, is NVIDIA, NVDA, which it just, you know, it's one of these incredible stories that they're the only producing AI beneficiary out there. The stock was up 2.5 during the day, though it was up about 12 during the day to a new high of 627. I mean, the stock is up it's, you know, it's more than tripled in the last 3 years, so it's something else. Not my cup of tea. I don't chase these things. If we had a 50 or 100 point correction in it, I would be interested. In fact, the big drop in Tesla today got everybody real excited, and all I hear on the financial media is short Tesla. Well, I got my buy order there, looking to buy this thing, and probably may do so tomorrow for a trade. Just frankly, I love when they kill the stocks and bad news. This is like buying wholesale, you know, chasing stocks into new highs like NVIDIA. It's just not my cup of tea. But we'll see how that pans out. We're watching that one very carefully. But that was the story more or less today, and we can go from there. Also, we're at the full moon, too. Mm-hmm. Today is the 25th. So are we going to get a little change of direction up here? Is this a sign of full moon fever, so we'll find out.
Apparently, according to Bloomberg, U.S. Gasoline reserves fell at a record level last week. Is that because of the conflict in the Middle East, or just because the cold snap ended and people got back in their cars again and caught up on their shopping?
Well, I'm watching it technically, and it looked to me like the crude oil was bottoming here. And in fact, there's a 200-day moving average that I track, among others, and it seems to be creeping above that here. So it might just be a bear bounce if you're a bear on oil. I'm more of a bull, but technically it looks like it might have hit a little bottom here. So that might be related to what's going on in the Red Sea and around the world. We'll find out. North Korea is playing around with nukes out there. You don't know if they're going to have an accident and do something stupid. So at the moment, technically, the crude oil looks like it's hit a little bit of a trading bottom and maybe a bigger bottom. We'll just watch out. And if it's going to rally, it may be related to some international news. We'll find out. But the big question with crude oil is, how much can it go up if there's a administration change here in the U.S. at the next election, opening up the spigots on production and possibly depressing prices at that point. So it depends if you're trading or taking a long-term view. I still think long-term, the pressure is to the upside because there's worldwide demand, and we just don't know what a political income would do. And then we got big players out there like, Russia that control a lot of the energy. So, it'll be interesting how it all plays out, not to mention conflicts like the Houthis and the Red Sea that we just referred to. And, the fact that we have, worldwide conflicts underway now, so it's nothing, wouldn't be too surprising if suddenly oil went up on the short term, that is, for purely military response reasons,
I thought it was interesting. The U.S. State Department warned Iran that they were under a high risk of suffering a terrorist attack from ISIS. That attack happened, but I bet you the Iranians are still blaming it on the U.S.
You're talking about the Pakistani event.
Yeah.
Right. So, this is it. I mean, every time you say we're in a world war now, people keep thinking, well, this doesn't look like World War One or World War Two. And yes, it probably is a bit different because of technology and everything else. But we really have a world war underway. I mean, you got to pick your spot: Pakistan, Iran, as you just mentioned. Houthis at the Red Sea. Hamas with Israel. Ukraine and Russia. Crazy North Korea. No, we don't know what they're doing, and we know China's flying planes and trying to intimidate Taiwan into submission there. Of course, their time frame is a bit longer, but there's a lot of stuff going on out there. To me, I keep mentioning this, and in the street doesn't follow this thinking. They just thinking about is the Fed lowering interest rates, and are the corporate earnings good this year? And are the high-tech stock like NVIDIA still leading the way? And is inflation, boy, out there is really coming down, even though I don't believe that's the case to the extent they're talking about. So, but they don't talk about the war. They don't talk about the risks of something. What about an EMP attack on the part of Russia that could knock out our power and satellites and everything else overnight, and suddenly we're living in the dark ages? I mean, we have bad players out there that could do all kinds of stuff, but for some reason the stock market doesn't really care about it, and they're just looking forward to a very positive year. So we're trading stuff. I mean, most of what we have in the newsletter is long the market, though we have some hedges with some indexes. But for the most part, you know, we're trying to play, you know, what we see, not what we feel. But, you know, the thing is, we just have, you know, in my own mind, a bit of skepticism here about where all this is going to end up. Now, cyclically, we're still in a negative time frame. And yes, we had the first few days of January down, Jim, and then, of course, we bounced back sharply. But the first quarter still could be choppy. We still have the vernal equinox in mid-March, and we have the Groundhog Day coming up, and I still feel, you know, there's volatility around that little sucker. So, you know, we've got Jamie Dimon out there still cautious about the economy and the state of the world over the next 2 years. So there's a lot of stuff to weigh in terms of your strategy. You know, if you're long-term and you got a 50-year time frame, who cares, I guess. If the market drops 20 or 30%, it tends to come back. But I don't think we're out of the woods here. I think we could be setting up a bull trap here into new highs out of the blue, in the view of what else is going on in the world, and also based on some of our cycle work. So it's also the year of the dragon in China. We've got the Chinese New Year, February 10th, coming up, and that should be an interesting time frame because, you know, markets stopped trading in China during that period of time. And it's interesting, too, I don't know if you read, but China prohibited short selling of stocks just recently because stocks were going down, and they said, well, you can't short sell stocks anymore. So then 2 days later, they came out and said, the China Central Bank came out and announced it's going to cut the reserve requirements for its banks, trying to goose up the stock market. So, you know, they have their set of problems in China on the stock market front, too. So, you know, a lot of cross currents here. It's really wild what's going on.
Can you imagine if there was a run on a Chinese bank and they've lowered their reserves?
Right.
We've already seen their two biggest real estate companies in trouble.
Well, they're trying to stimulate it, and, you know, by cutting the amount of reserves the banks must maintain, they're trying to get the markets up and maybe help save that real estate fiasco that exists over there. So it's watching all these opportunities, you know, you look at how depressed some of the Chinese stocks are, like Alibaba, and I guess was one of the bigger names. You know, if they stimulate enough out there and they try to prevent short selling of stocks, they could try to really push the market up. Of course, this is not new for government to interfere in the markets. We've talked umpteen times about how Japan is actively involved in their markets. And we know the U.S. Plunge Protection Team is actively involved, though nobody really wants to talk about it. Why? Because they can't prove the exact transactions are occurring, but it's there. So anyway, that's sort of what's happening right now. We'll see how the market trades here into today's full moon and the Groundhog Day from the cycle point of view. And I still feel we're going to see, you know, a pullback here into March. So let's see, maybe even beyond that, maybe well beyond that. But let's take it a day at a time.
The Chinese stock market is down to where it was 24 years ago. I think 2005. It's fallen to its level to where it was in 2005. And that's when China basically had just declared it was going to be a free enterprise society.
Right. And, you know, we're responsible for helping make all that happen over there for them. So, you know, it's, I guess, it comes back to bite you, too, you know, in terms of supporting a regime that ultimately could be your enemy. So it's really problematic. But anyway, I don't want to get into the politics of the whole thing. It changes year to year. Mm-hmm. You know, Trump gets back in and the Republicans back in, they're going to probably put more import restrictions on Chinese goods. And some of those, you know, were removed with the Biden administration. So it's such a political manipulation. It's really, really crazy. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, we have a war underway around the world. And, you know, it's really significant. I mean, we don't know what trigger could really explode into a much bigger how it could explode to a much bigger situation. But I think we're going to be the last to find out about it, because we don't hear about all the air strikes the U.S. is making right away, you know, in Syria or, you know, in the Middle East or around Yemen and so forth. We hear sort of about in delay. Oh, by the way, U.S. we got troops got attacked 80 times in the last 60 days. You know, any one of those events, you know, remember the Gulf of Tonkin event back in the 1960s? I mean, just one event like that could have set off a world war. And now it's like, so they sink a ship, so what? You know, it just, I don't know, it's a liberal mentality that's running through the governments. You know, they just don't have any sense of history or the importance of these events. So, you know, I don't know, it's mental illness ultimately, because we do have people dying, we have extreme events, but the proper actions are not being taken, and we sort of brush it under the mat, like, oh, so what? So, you know, a few American sailors got killed, so what? Or a couple ships got sunk, so what? You know, or we got attacked many, many places, but that's okay, you're allowed to do that. I mean, it just mental illness across the board here. So I guess the bottom line is either the market must like it because the market's staying up or doesn't realize the significance of it, or suddenly it's going to hit them and slap them in the face the way a Pearl Harbor did. You know, something really dramatic happens that they can't ignore anymore. So we'll just see how it all plays out. We hope there are no, you know, future confrontations or deaths and so forth, but it seems to me it's accelerating. So I don't think that's good for the markets. I guess it's perhaps good for gold or, you know, alternate real estate, you know, as others, you know, investments, maybe Bitcoin, you know, things to protect yourself here a little bit. Maybe even auto auctions, like what's going on. We talked about this off air, like here in Scottsdale, the big Barrett Jackson auction going underway and all the money that's auctioned, raised with these car sales. I mean, that's, you know, these cars have been good investments for many of the collectors over the years. So that's a good alternate investment besides gold, real estate, and Bitcoin, I suppose. Real interesting opportunity.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on with gold?
It's trending sideways to lower. There's some technical numbers just under the 2000 level, like the 1985 level priced in U.S. dollars that you might see. My overall work is telling me that we're setting the stage for a huge move, maybe triggered by some external event. It just trending sideways here as best I can describe it, but I think maybe another shot lower a little bit might be needed to create a more meaningful trading bottom in it. But if I had to stick my neck out, I would say over the next couple of years, I mean, maybe even this year, you could see a surge up to that 2300 level, even 2700 in gold. So I'm overall pretty bullish. And, you know, one of the things that always worries me is government intervention in the gold market the way it does in other markets. But, you know, we saw confiscation of gold with FDR, and we know that, you know, a lot of manipulation in the gold futures has occurred in recent decades, a lot of research pointing to the government intervention there. So if that hadn't occurred, by the way, the same research says gold will already be substantially higher than where it's now trading. But in any event, I think the turn has occurred here, and I think, you know, maybe under the 2000 level shortly, and then another surge higher. So I'm a bull for the year. I think there's more coming to the upside.
What's going on with uranium?
Still high on the charts. You've had a big move, though, already. You know, the big name, Cameco, CCJ, is sort of the one I track as my main indicator. And, you know, it's pulled off a couple points from its high. It was around 50, and it's around 48, but the charts point into the mid-50s or higher, so that tells me uranium is still in play, and it's just going to, you know, it's had a huge move already. I mean, uranium went from about $20 up to $100 in the last couple of years. It's had a huge advance, so lots being discounted in that price. I wouldn't be inclined to chase it here as a trader. I mean, you know, we've been in and out of it for the last couple of years on the long side. Still fundamentally looks good to me. Charts look overall good to me, but they're extended. So if you're not in it, I'd probably wait for, you know, a bit of a pullback, but still like it. You know, for the same reason you would, you know, like any energy play, palladium is looking like it's bottoming to me here a little bit. I'm watching that one. And lithium is still on the table, even though it's pulled off a lot with the lesser interest in EVs and so forth. But that's just a temporary correction as well, since there's still a big push for the EV vehicles. And, you know, a lot of governments, particularly, for example, even here in the state of Arizona, they're trying to put out bids for charging stations and so forth to make it more comfortable to have these vehicles. So you still have government support for that. So even though we've run into a lull here, and many investors or just individuals have decided they'd rather be in a hybrid and, you know, I sort of balance their bet against only a electric vehicle. They wouldn't rely only on that. They would have some gas if they needed it. But, you know, we're going through a seasonal change here, and over time there will be more of these vehicles around. So that would provide support for the lithium market as well.
Mark, cryptocurrencies, are they still hot?
Oh yeah, still hot. We're just going through a dip. You know, we had a big was it sell the rumor, buy the news, you know, or sell the story, buy the rumor, sell the story, the actual story. So remember, I told you in a previous interview, you know, as soon as the ETF started to trade, that was a time to ring the register and take a profit in the only because of how much they've rallied. But you know, with BlackRock behind it and with all these ETFs. And it could take off at any moment. I mean, you know, we had a nice correction about the $10,000 in Bitcoin from roughly 49 down to 39,000. And yes, I could see it, you know, possibly going a bit further. But you know, this is a diversification strategy for institutions now, because now it's legal. You can buy it. Not that it was illegal before, but now it's, since as an ETF, it's part of an allocation process for the big investors. So they're sort of compelled on a certain level, not saying across the board 100%, but, you know, most money managers are now compelled that you would keep a certain percentage in energy or in gold. The Bitcoin becomes an alternate investment and a complement to your overall portfolio. So that buying out there is going to eventually drive Bitcoin dramatically higher in the next couple, 3 years or longer, in my opinion. So you got to, that looming demand and actual implementation of portfolio investment is going to, you know, provide buying for the Bitcoin. So I'm looking at GBTC now, which was the most actively traded one and the biggest one. It's not the new BlackRock ETF, but you know, the thing was $43 a share and it got down to about $34 and now it's around $35. So like anything else, dollar cost averaging, you know, if you believe Bitcoin, as I do, is going to be $80,000 to $100,000 a coin in the next couple 3 years, and you know, it's like anything else, it's just part of your portfolio. So I'm a bull and have been.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Great to be here. Talk to you next week.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.